Welcome to Inside New Mexico. I'm Derek Underhill, and I'm talking with the chairman of our Republican Party of New Mexico, former congressman of the 2nd Congressional District of New Mexico, Steve Pierce. Steve, how are you?
Hey, I'm doing great, Derek.
We've got another exciting show today. I've got two friends of mine that serve in the state Senate, Stu Engel. He's the minority leader, and then Senator Gay Kernan, longtime friend of mine. We went to high school together. So they're both coming up in this program. As we wrapped up that session, I felt like it was important to get their input. And so much of the show today is going to be talking with those two members of the Republican Party who serve in Santa Fe and represent us well. I'll tell you, Derek, when I see spectacular thoughts, then I want to make those a part of the show. And Tucker Carlson this week did a tremendous, tremendous job in addressing the issue that says that the Russians are colluding again to elect Trump. And so he titles his piece, and it's with Fox News. Tucker Carlson says that Russia isn't attacking our democratic system. Our own ruling class is. And so he talks about the story of the American decline is the story of an incompetent ruling class. I served in Congress for 14 years. And during that time, I will tell you that many times I disagreed with Republicans too. And so I constantly found myself on the outs with both parties because they were doing things that I felt like were completely incompetent. And that's what Tucker Carlson is saying. The ruling class has been incompetent. And he, of course, says that you're going to hear a lot of explanations for it. But the truth is, it's simple, that the people in charge inherited an industrial superpower with unchallenged military dominance, and in little more than a generation, they squandered all of it in exchange for short-term profits, bigger vacation homes, cheaper household help. They wrecked what they did not build. And I think that is such a poignant way to say it. As business owners, my wife and I always felt like that we could take a short-term look at things and get a little more profit. But if we invested in our infrastructure, if we bought better and bigger equipment, if we put the money into training for our employees, into their knowledge base, that we were going to have a longer-term company, one that was geared for, yes, profit. We had to make a profit to stay afloat. But it was also not a short-time profit, but long-term profit. Many times, corporations have been insistent that we not have very secure borders because they wanted the cheaper labor. And so, basically, in little more than one generation, we've outsourced entire sectors of our economy to China and other nations. The people in charge allowed immigrants to come here without documentation. As they had no documentation, they had to work for cash. That drove down wages. And basically, Tucker makes the point that all of this crippled the middle class in the process. The middle class is what always has set America apart, and yet for their own personal gain, they and the elite ruling class, they've sold this country down the river. That point of view that Tucker Carlson had is spot on, and I've seen it.
I'll give you an example of it. In our own legislative session that just ended, they passed a bill giving illegal aliens the ability to get state licenses. So if I'm a American citizen with a contractor's license, I now have to compete with an illegal alien who, of course, does not have a social security number and doesn't have to pay taxes. So how do I compete when I have to pay taxes and they don't? Here's another example. There is a FCC regulation that says only 25% of a media company, a broadcast company, can be foreign owned. Right now, one of the biggest radio companies in the country is petitioning the FCC to go to 100% because there's more money in it if people outside the United States can own stock in those companies. Right now, we're worried about Russia or China affecting our elections. Can you imagine if Russia or China owned 100% of the stock of this national company? And this company owns most of the radio stations in the United States. The effect they could have in an election through propaganda. Imagine what would have happened during World War II if the Germans, say, had owned NBC or CBS while we were at war with them. This is why, when broadcasting started, the FCC said that you could not have foreign ownership of U.S. broadcast entities. We are already allowing now in 2020 25% foreign ownership, and now this company wants to take it to 100%. So it looks like we are more concerned sometimes about making money than the sovereignty of our nation.
a lot of times I hear this great concern coming from your average everyday worker, Democrat, Republican, Independent, doesn't matter. I hear about the same thing, the same concerns. And so you worry about the future of the country, but then Tucker goes on to make another great point that the population has grown tired of this. They see what's going on in front of them. They don't like it. They haven't really known what to do about it. And people say, well, how do you know the people are tired of it? Donald Trump is one sign that people are tired of it, and Bernie Sanders is the other. If you listen to Bernie, he's saying we're going to turn the system upside down, that it doesn't represent you, the people. Donald Trump basically said the same thing to different voters, and so you've got both parties are breaking with the inside ruling class, and so the ruling class is losing its grip on power. They know it, and they can feel it, they can smell it, and it terrifies them. So as we're going into this election season, know that I think it is this kind of very nebulous concept that voters on both sides are alarmed at where the country's going. The ruling class is trying to tell the voters, no, we're still going to be in charge, and you're going to be okay. We're going to take care of you. So the first thing they did was they denied that Trump's election was real. They retreated into fantasy. They started running the whole Russia probe, the Mueller probe, then the thing with Ukraine. And so then they resorted to authoritarianism. And now then they're trying to convince the public of anything that will scare them, because fearful people are much easier to control. So this whole idea, and it's resurfacing again, that Russia is meddling. The networks have gone crazy saying about the meddling of Russia. And people were saying, ho-hum, we've heard this before. So now then they decide, well, that they'll just scold America, that people should be outraged. And the death of outrage is now talked about on the evening news. And apathy, they're always pointing at the apathy. And then when that still didn't work, then they started saying, well, the Russians are trying to help Bernie Sanders. They feel like the Democrats feel like that they have to not let him be the nominee, or they don't have a prayer at the polls. And so they're going to try to say, well, Russians are helping Bernie, don't vote for him. I think people are fed up with the ruling class who is working with the media and feeding us this line of stuff. And so I think that Tucker Carlson hit it right on point in his opening monologue. And so I know we have a great show in store for you. We've got, again, we mentioned at the beginning of the show, we've got Senator Stu Engel and Senator Gay Kernan. But I did want to put this in. Who messed the country up? I fought them my entire time in D.C. and continue to fight them now here. And so, Derek, again, great opening today for the show.
As to the point, as Tucker Carlson was in that monologue, I can't help but wonder if there won't be a push by the elites to silence Tucker Carlson, kind of like what happened to Bill O'Reilly. We have just wrapped up a legislative session with some controversial bills that passed and some that didn't. We'll be talking about those with some of the folks that voted on them coming up next on Inside New Mexico.
Attention, New Mexico veterans. If you were honorably discharged from the U.S. Armed Forces, you've earned state and federal benefits, and the New Mexico Department of Veteran Services is standing by to assist you. State benefits include a veteran's property tax exemption, education and training, and transportation services. We can also assist with claims for federal VA benefits. The state of New Mexico and this radio station thank you for your service. More information at nmveterans.org or 1-866-433-8387.
Welcome back to Inside New Mexico with Chairman of our Republican Party, Steve Pierce. And Steve, you have a guest on the phone.
We do. Senator Stu Engel, longtime friend of mine from up in the Portales Clovis area, a farmer over there, and he is our minority leader in the state Senate. And so he's one of the ones that holds our team together, but also negotiates with the other side as bills get put into place, and as the leadership on the Democrat side is looking to pass things off the floor, sometimes they'll consult with Republicans. Sometimes they know Republicans will oppose them, and so they won't consult. But I want Stu to tell us a little bit more of his background and what got you into politics, Stu.
Well, Steve, I'm glad to have a great visit with you. You know, Steve, I ran in the fall of 1984. That was the year, last year, that Ronald Reagan ran for president for his last term. And I replaced a senator named Mickey Barnett that now is an Albuquerque attorney. And I had never been in the legislature before, and it was a great experience to start with. And I can tell you one thing, I knocked doors in three counties, and the thing about it was it's an adventure, and it still is. And the thing about it is I have enjoyed my years in the legislature. I now have five counties after a couple of redistrictings. And the thing about it is, you know, up there in New Mexico, we are blessed with a citizen legislature. And the thing of it is we have to come home and we have to visit with folks about the things we voted on and things we voted for and against. And it's really something that I think is what all American government is about.
So what were the discussions like on the red flag bill? We've got a lot of comments coming into the Republican Party on that and people hostile about it.
I think this is a law, even though it was changed and amended a lot different than its original source, it still is something that this state didn't want and still doesn't want. I think it's going to be a real issue next November when folks run for re-election, and it should be. I'm saying there may be a county or two that might be for it, like Santa Fe and maybe one other one. But I think the rest of New Mexico, and you have 30-some sheriffs that come out against even trying to enforce a law like that, there's something wrong with it. And the thing about it is I think it's, like I say, I think next November folks are going to remember that issue and vote.
Well, it's one of the main reasons that I'm saying that we're going to turn the state red, and I absolutely believe it. You're one of the first people in the state that convinced me that we could turn the Senate red. Before, I was thinking, okay, it's been so long and just hadn't looked at it closely enough. And as I listened to you give a couple of speeches, I realized that I needed to expand my playing field, that we should be going after both the House, the Senate, and the presidency. And we'll pull a lot of the other races right along with us.
I think the president's going to be an asset in New Mexico this year. I think the people of New Mexico have realized that, President Trump is not an enemy of this country, and he's trying to do his very best to make America the strongest country in the world again.
The Hispanic voters through the state are beginning to realize that they were pretty much in opposition to him in 2016 when he first ran. And in that midterm 2018, still our polls showed to be very divisive against the president. But Hispanic voters began to come in early 2019 and tell me that they were switching, that they were going to vote for the president and they were going to support him all the way. So I believe that that's going to be a key thing. A lot of the Hispanic voters are pro-life, they're pro-gun. And those are both issues that these progressives in the legislature have just been careless with. Now, this is the main purpose of this 30-day session in the off year is the budget. Tell me a little bit about the budget and how that process worked out and where we ended up on the spending.
Well, the budget of the state of New Mexico, and we are so blessed, Steve, from certainly the southeastern part of the state of Eddy and Lee counties. We have just vast amounts of acreage down there, as you well know, that the state is the sole owner of the mineral rights on. And the oil and gas wells that are being drilled down there are a fabulous source of dollars for the state of New Mexico. And we had hundreds of millions, if not billions, last year of extra money, and we had the same situation this year. Fortunately, we were able to put a pretty good slug of that money in a reserve account, over $1 billion is going to be there in case we need it again. We also started a program for small children, but we turned it into a trust fund that will use those earnings for the children's trust fund. But we spent a lot of money this year in New Mexico in our budgets. We have raises for state employees and teachers, not as much as some people were pushing for, but if you look at those raises over the last 4 years, they're up close to 20%, and that doesn't count the benefits that go along with it. But the thing about it is we have an $8 billion budget plus, and the thing about it is we still have billions of dollars in reserve, thanks to a representative named Larry Larrañaga, who passed away a year or so ago. He created a fund that we thought it might take about 5 or 6 years to get 40 or 50 million in it. And it's got over $1 billion in it now. So that's a rainy day fund that we were lucky to have in existence when this money came along, because it's hard to keep sometimes folks from spending all of it. But we've got millions of dollars going into highway projects. It's going to be a while. Those millions put in last year, and they're going to start on those this year. The thing about it is in New Mexico, we've got lots and lots of thousands of miles of highways that need fixing. We got a lot of money in the channels to fix those, but we're going to start on it and keep working on it. But highway construction only happens in the summer, so it's not going to be as fast as we'd all like, but we do have the funds, and we're going to be fixing some highways up.
When I was in the state legislature, we had a presentation why New Mexico always struggled so much on highways, and one presenter told us that in the geographic area that represents New Mexico, you could fit five eastern states, those northeastern states that are so small, and in the same area as New Mexico, they have 55 million voters in order to pay the taxes and build roads. We've got about 2 million people who pay taxes and build the roads, and so always we're struggling, but it's nice to hear that that infrastructure was funded in this budget this year. Well, we're just about to end our segment. Is there anything that you'd like to say to the voters out there in New Mexico about serving in the Senate, about people running for office?
I'll tell you what, you can run for office in New Mexico. When I ran, I had never even been to Santa Fe or inside the Capitol and was elected, and it's a learning process for all of us, and it's a learning process for me every year. And the thing about it is we're still one of the few legislatures that you can get a few signatures and go run, and you talk to people and knock doors, and you can get elected.
I would just say to our listeners that, again, from me to Senator Ingle from the Portales-Clovis area, thank you for your service. Thanks for being there to steward the money, to be a steward over our taxpayer money, and to make sure that we're solid for rainy days, that we've got the money in the bank. If the oil and gas industry slows down, we know it's going to slow down. So thanks for your service, and thanks for standing up for our pro-life rights and for our gun rights.
Well, Steve, there are issues that the people in New Mexico support by a vast majority.
You've been listening to Stu Ingle, the Republican leader in the Senate. Just a great individual, a great servant, and we appreciate his service. Thanks again, Stu, and we'll be talking to you again.
Thanks, Steve. Anytime, my friend.
In our next segment, Steve Pierce will be talking with Senator Gay Kernan. I hope you'll stay with us on Inside New Mexico.
National Guard and Reserve members are true leaders, both in the military and in the workplace. They are highly skilled and get the job done every day. Employer support of the Guard and Reserve, ESGR, can help you recruit top-notch service members to your workforce. Hiring Guard and Reserve members is good for your business and good for your community. Visit esgr.mil/employers to learn more.
Welcome back to Inside New Mexico, and we have another guest calling in to talk to us. Steve, who have you got?
Well, we've got Senator Gay Kernan. She is from Hobbs. I actually knew her in high school. So, Senator, thanks for being on. But tell our listeners a little bit about why you decided to run for office and what motivates you to stay running for office.
Well, first of all, let me thank you for having me on the show, and it's always good to hear your voice. And you're right. We go way back. I believe Hobbs High School, those were great days, and it was great knowing you then as it is now. So I was appointed to the New Mexico Senate in 2002 by then-Governor Gary Johnson, and I completed a two-year term that former Senator Shirley Bailey held, and then she moved out of state. So that was my first experience as a state senator. And then, of course, I ran again in 2004, and I have made the decision to run again. I think we have some very important things on the table going forward, such as redistricting. And I also have enjoyed very much sitting on Senate finance, which takes a few years to get to that point. And that's why I'm interested in continuing.
Now, what did you find to be the most challenging in this particular session?
I think, Steve, the most challenging thing is to continue to remind people that the oil and gas industry is very volatile, and we have to be so careful about how we spend the revenues to be sure that we don't make promises that we can't keep in 3 or 4 or 5 years. Very encouraged about the additional revenue we've been getting, but I have to tell you, every time I have the opportunity, I talk about how we have to be so careful with those dollars.
Now, one of the things that, as I watch, you express concern about the lack of funding and education. Is that something that got got cured before the funding bill actually passed?
Well, actually, over the last 2 years, I think we've done a very good job increasing public school support. This year, we appropriated $3.418 billion, and that's a 6.4% increase for public schools. And on top of that, we were able to give our teachers another very nice raise this year at 4%. I think we've done very well with regard to public school support. I'm very pleased with how that money is being allocated, and I think we've done a good job. Of course, we've been under the watchful eyes of the judiciary, which is concerning to me, with the Martinez-Yazzie lawsuit. And that particular lawsuit has said to us as legislators, we need to spend more money on education. But I think there needs to be accountability.
So tell me a little bit more about how invasive that Martinez-Yazzie decision is.
Well, it's concerning because the judge who made the final decision on that lawsuit sent a directive to the legislature that we needed to increase our funding in particular ways. One example is we were encouraged to increase funding for at-risk students, and we've done that over the last 2 years. We added another, 0.5% for at-risk funding this year. So we're responding to those requests, and I think some of it was appropriate. We were also directed to increase teacher salaries, and we've done that for the last 2 years. So I think we are doing what we feel that we can afford to do. The problem is the plaintiffs in the lawsuit probably will never be satisfied.
What did you find to be the most challenging part of this particular session?
The red flag bill was one that came over, and we almost were successful in stopping that on the Senate floor. We were two votes shy, and I was very disappointed that we weren't able to do that. But many of the more moderate Democrats that sometimes are able to vote with us, they received an awful lot of pressure, and so it was difficult for them to cross over. But that was one bill that I was really disappointed that we weren't able to stop. And, of course, the recreational marijuana, we stopped that in the Senate and Senate Corporations, which I was really pleased. That bill would have gone on to Senate Finance, and we stopped it there last year. I just think that's probably a terrible direction for our state to go.
One of the things that the RPNM has done, the Republican Party of New Mexico has brought suit against the Secretary of State for what we thought were violations of the law that you all passed on voting. You passed that last year in the session, and so it's very clear what kind of documentation is required, and the Secretary of State was allowing absentee ballots to be counted that were not compliant with the law. So what the Democrats did is put a bill in that would change the law. Basically, it would take away the requirements to provide that identification on the ballot that is sent in. And so that bill died somewhere late in the session. Are you familiar with the process in which it died?
Yes, I am. And, of course, that's the election cleanup bill that was sponsored by an Albuquerque senator. And that was a really interesting process. And, of course, we operate a little differently than the House. So when that bill came to the floor, we began having a long discussion about that bill, and several amendments were tried. And one amendment was submitted by a senator from Albuquerque to require open primaries. And, of course, that was an interesting amendment. And then he realized that if we put that amendment on, then the bill would have to go back to the House for concurrence. And so he withdrew the amendment. Then one of our senators grabbed that bill out of the trash can, put his name on it, resubmitted it, trying to get an amendment on there so we could kill the bill because it would have to go back to the House. It was an interesting evening, and then a call was put on the Senate, which I believe 2:30 in the morning we couldn't get on. There were a couple of senators that had gone to Albuquerque, and so we waited and held that over for the next day. And then there was an issue about the rules when Senator Scherer had already talked on the floor for about an hour and a half, and I believe the majority tried to interrupt, and we got a ruling from Council Service that that was not allowed. And that's the difference kind of between the House and the Senate, because our Senate Majority Leader realized that he was not following the rule and he withdrew. And I don't think that would have happened in the House. And so Senator Engel and Senator Worth had a kind of a conversation on the floor. And so Senator Scherer could continue the filibuster right up until the end of the session, which literally killed that election bill.
Yeah. Now, I'm sure that our listeners are fascinated with the procedural things. Forget the issues. We're having a vote on open primaries, which usually Republicans won't support, but I would have been there with you saying, look, let's bring this up. Let's put it on there because we know it's going to be poison to them. Mm-hmm. They will kill the whole bill. And so you find yourself taking votes sometimes that are political in nature. They're not indicating a preference at all. Exactly. And so I'm fascinated and love the fact that you're able to just keep the process going, to keep it from passing, because it would, in my mind, have allowed vote without documentation, without any verification of who is casting a vote. So again, great work there. Thanks again to Senator Gay Kernan, who lives in Hobbs, represents several counties in southeast New Mexico.
Well, thank you very much, Steve. I know you're working very, very hard to make sure that we do turn this state red, and we thank you for that.
Well, thank you for joining us again for another episode of Inside New Mexico. And don't forget to stay engaged with what's happening by going to the Republican Party updated website at gopnm.org. You can get the latest news, upcoming events, information about our elected officials, voter resources, and all kinds of important and useful information about our party and its mission. You can also find nominating petition for our judicial candidates on the homepage. Follow the instructions on how to sign and return those. You can listen to our podcast, Inside New Mexico Podcast, from our website. Go to our party's Facebook page. Check out what's going on in the party Twitter account. The handle for both of those is at New Mexico GOP. We also want to remind our listeners that the Republican Party is always looking for volunteers to help us with our mission to win New Mexico for President Trump and to turn the roundhouse red this year. It's now or never for the state of New Mexico. You can call us at the party headquarters if you just want to volunteer in person, 505-298-3662. That's 505-298-3662.
Thank you, Steve Pierce. I will look forward to meeting with you and our listeners again right here next week on Inside New Mexico.